Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Yes, there to be different, just wonderful to have all of you tuning in, whether it's via the audio streaming, Midway 1548 or Satellite Islam. My name is Ismail Briyavan. Just excellent to have all of you in with us for the next hour or so until 9:30. Inshallah, this morning we have a wonderful, wonderful guest. And we are truly, truly blessed. We've had some wonderful rains during the course of the week. On Thursday, in fact, in our area, in the Indonesia area, we saw buckets full of rain, and alhamdulillah, we know it was rain that we really needed. Friday we also had rain, and yesterday threatened, but nothing much. Looking out of the windows of Radio Islam, cloudy cover, a cooler day than the last two, and inshallah, Allah knows best, we are going to have some rain later in the course of the day. And we are truly, truly blessed. And this morning we've got a wonderful guest and someone who's no stranger. So much to share, so much to tell us about, and that's none other than Kerry Goodwin, who comes from a family of gardeners, father, mother, all in this field. So a wonderful experience growing up in this environment, and she's going to share some lovely ideas. Hi, good morning, Kerry.
Good morning. How are you?
Very well, thank you. And yes, you come in from a long, what should I say, family, you know, history of people who've been in the world of gardening, and that is how you got bitten. Tell us a little bit about who was the first person in the family that got involved in this particular aspect of gardening? Mom, dad, grandfather, where did it all start?
It actually started with my mom.
Okay.
And she loved plants, and she also loved to teach, so she specialized as a botany teacher. And then when she started having children, then teaching took up too much time, and so she decided to start growing. And then she became a grower, and basically our business has bloomed from there. And then my dad actually also came into the business because they were doing so well. And now it's caught on in both my brother and myself, and even my sister-in-law are all involved in the business. But we're lucky, actually, our team is, I mean, all the people that work for us as well. We're just like one big family because it's a family business. So we're very fortunate.
Yes, I think it's awesome. And, you know, also that you're in that part of the world, you know, I don't know, somehow or the other, but just come off the highway and we turn left in Bayes, Nadia, and you're going down, eventually getting to Builders Drift. Is there something about the climate in that particular area? Is it the environment? What is it that attracts so many people, or is it that you're nearer towards the Hunter Peaceful Dam? What is that?
I actually think it's I think throughout the whole of Johannesburg, we have been so fortunate that we have a very rich natural environment. You know, they always say how Johannesburg's got the most trees with any city, so we're one of the biggest forests.
Mm-hmm. Man-made forests, yes,
yeah, man-made forests. And so I know for me, I love the trees, but then I also like all the grass fields. And, you know, as soon as you go in from the honeydew area out into Hartbeespoort Dam, you just go in from your man-made forest of Johannesburg into your grasslands, and then you go out to the dam itself. So I just think we're so privileged to live in such an environment where we have all these little biomes and little microhabitats that we can explore, and that is God providing nature for us. So
another thing in the last couple of years, we've seen this urban sprawl spreading.
Mm.
And it's also, you know, sort of getting into the honeydew area. Do you find that it's, you know, the biomes that you're talking about and all these little sort of environments, are they being eroded?
I think people that are, but at the same time, people are very conscious of the environment that they are, and so they're trying to preserve the trees, you know, or they... One of the ones that I love at the moment is some of the urban developments out towards the dam, like Blair Athol and Monaghan. MAFID has actually created an indigenous grass seed, especially for them. So it's a mixture of different grass seeds that the people that live there can go and scatter into their lawns, and I put lawns in inverted commas, to create a wild grass seed, you know, maybe just outside of their lawns, but... So people are adapting to their environment. You know, that's still a very big trend to plant the indigenous plants. So even though we have townhouse structures and bigger housing complexes going up, I think people are conscious that we actually have to keep our environment there. You know, we have to protect the wetland. One of my favorites is at Cosmo City, where they've put a big fence, or actually it's a walled kind of a fence, around a frog preserve. So here you have a beautiful, I mean, Cosmo City is lovely to go and visit because it just has so many different types of housing, big ones, small ones, for everyone. I think it caters for everybody's needs. And then on top of it, it's actually catering for your frogs. And I'm thinking, how special is that?
Wow, that's really special. You know, when you think that people are concerned about, you know, preserving, I think these are indicators of how well the environment is doing. So here you have a wall that's preserving and looking at the environment for frogs, and that is actually a fantastic. You know, it's just awesome to think that wow, people can do these things, and they're so you know, conscious about that. You know, the question you've raised is something very interesting. It's about grasslands. Now, you know, normally when we drive out and people. What is that? Just, you know, we don't seem to see any change. But if you look at the grasses, they're so beautiful, and you have, you know, you can actually just take a different, you know, types of grasses that we get. And we're really, really blessed when we look at the environment that we have.
Yeah. Well, especially at the moment, because all the grass heads are flowering. So, you know, February, March type of time. You'll see there's so many birds because there's all the seed heads on top of the grasses. And I know when I'm buying for the garden centers, I get so excited. I'm like, okay, I'll have this grass and this grass and this grass. Because as you say, there's just so many types. And, I mean, what we're buying is not only the indigenous ones, there's beautiful exotic ones. And they're very water-wise. They change with the season. So as I say, now they're looking beautiful and they're full of seeds, which will attract birds and different insects into your garden. And they're just one of the trends that we're going to start speaking about later within your gardening is they create a whimsical feel. You know that when you have a wind blowing through the grasses, it's very relaxing, and yeah, I think it's very special.
I think so, you know, but again, you know, it's about being educated about the values of all these things and being told that, look, this is what it is. And once you have an eye for it, I think our people will then understand, because normally when you drive, you say, oh, well, that's just grass, so what's so special about it? But once you understand the value it is and you understand what it could do and also see its beauty differently, I think about 2 weeks ago when we spoke about, you know, winter, and I remember, you know, saying that in winter, the stark beauty of when there's no leaves on the tree. That is such a beautiful sight. Although we know that we would love to see the trees with the leaves, but sometimes without the leaves, it just makes a magnificent sight. So you see it, you know, in this cold winter day, blue skies, and you see this, you know, stark, stark beauty, and it is just amazing.
Mm. Well, I think that's what's so special about gardening, is that your garden changes with each season. And so that's what you have to appreciate. You get people who want to rush, you know, because, you know, they should have daffodils in almost now. And yet it's not time for them yet. You know, we need to enjoy, say, the grasslands or the beautiful summer flowering plants now. And don't rush any of that autumn, winter planting just yet. You know, we're having our rain so late. So let's enjoy the rain while it's coming, like you were saying earlier.
I think, you know, we're really truly blessed when we look at it, because people predicted, and when you looked at the experts and say, well, we'll have no rain until March, come the early, you know, autumn. But we've had rain, you know, although not in the season that we wanted it, but we've had in February and have quite a substantial amount, maybe not enough to fill up our dams. We are truly, truly blessed. But if you look at other parts of the country, water shortages still abound. But really, the rain has just made all the difference.
I think it has. There's nothing like the good, what comes from rain, because often the water that we're using from our taps and everything has been treated, obviously, to purify it. And so that sometimes affects the growing of our plants. So even though they're getting water, they might not be getting all the nutrients which just come from the goodness of rain. And I think anyone can say that when they look in their gardens and just see after it's rained, it's just, the blooms seem brighter.
Definitely. I don't know if maybe it's the nitrogen content in the rainwater. There's a lot of factors, but really a little bit of rainwater compared to copious amounts of tap water does make a difference. The rainwater definitely makes that difference.
Yes. So, and I think what's so lovely now is to see so many people, you know, with having had the drought, how they've adapted their strategies and they've put rainwater tanks or they're trying to reuse water. So there's this consciousness of the elements that are needed in a garden now, like water. It's not just as easy as turning on the tap like it used to be, I want to say, 9 months ago.
Yes, no, definitely. You know, the harvesting of rainwater has become such an important component in some people's lives, and people who are now building new homes are taking that into account and say, we need to find some of the ways of preserving the rain, you know, water, trying to utilize it to maximum. And those that have the opportunity are going further and saying, we're going to try and green the whole environment we're living in. And that, I think, is some of the trends that we're going to be looking at. Now, Kerry, we're looking at trends for 2016. Normally, our trends get set by, you know, Chelsea, which happens around about May, the first week of May. and we're still far away from then. What are your thoughts about trends for 2016? We've been talking about food security for quite a number of weeks, and it has been high on the agenda for, you know, not only in South Africa, but internationally people are saying it's time to go back to basics. Let us get and grow our own food, because in the pesticides, we know what we're going to be eating, we know what we're going to consume. Even just a little bit of something that we have in our garden. Let's go through some of the trends that you think would emerge for 2016, and with us as South Africans, because of the the drought that we had experienced, let's look at all that and see what trends you think would come up.
Okay. Well, it's definitely the edible is carrying on, and I think that's going to be an ongoing trend for many years in the future. And it's not only with it in your own environment. It could be, as we spoke about before, like within communities, you know, that is how they do it in the UK, where they have growing plots. So even here within South Africa, we have communities that are setting up to grow vegetables together. If they don't have space in their own garden, they're finding space somewhere else and teaming together to grow. So that's definitely one of the major trends. And as I say, it will just keep growing, because it's such a, it's an addictive thing. It's time that you get to spend with your friends and your family. You're doing good. You know, a lot of the food often, if you don't take it home for yourselves, is going to charities. So that is an amazing one.
Now that one, sorry, I just want to go.
Yeah.
I just want to go back to this edible, and you know, and I think it was such an amazing trend. I think after World War II, this had become very fashionable, where they had plots, you know, especially in the UK, set aside, and people came together as a collective. Now here in South Africa, we find lots of that happening on as we're driving, you know, along the highways. People are seeing these as opportunities where there's open space, and the urban sprawl doesn't allow them to grow in their own gardens. They're going out there. And they're doing this, and it's just something fantastic to see people, well, this is where they're trying to eke out a living, but not only that, eating from there, and I think that's amazing.
Mm. Well, and I think, as you said earlier, how you are actually, you know what you're putting into your soil, and you know what you're using, if you are going to use any pesticides, or if you're doing companion planting to keep the pests away. So it's just that almost security within yourself that you are getting the nutrients, the true nutrients of the plant. And maybe not always what you might find. You know, a lot of people will say that when they've grown the food themselves, it tastes different to when they go and buy it in the shops.
Now, that's very true. I think anyone who can attest to that, if you've grown something in your own garden, whether it's just even just a couple of spinach and perhaps a little bit of salad vegetables, it does make a difference. You can cut, you know, just before using it. It definitely tastes the same. Definitely has a distinctive taste, I beg your pardon.
Yeah. Well, we had a customer yesterday, and I thought it was so lovely. It was an elderly couple. And, you know, we sell trays of 6 seedlings, but often it's all the same. And he was saying to one of our salespeople, you know, I'd really just like 2 lettuces, 2 cabbages, 2 of this. So I went outside. I said, you know what, we'll make up a tray for you. It's really not a problem. And he says, because I don't want to grow everything. I just want to grow a little bit, and I don't want it to all come in at the same time, you know, so that he can harvest it all at the same time. And I thought that was so lovely. So he's just, it's him and his wife, and they're just going to grow a little bit for themselves to keep them healthy and happy throughout the autumn and winter period. So I was like, yay, we'll just make a little tray for you. And he was. Well, actually, when I went and saw what he bought, we have some varieties of lettuce with the oriental veggies in it as well. Uh-huh. And then there are probably 5 or 6 different types of lettuce or oriental veggies in a tray. So I thought he took one of those, and then the other ones we just made up some mixes for him. But it doesn't matter if you're a person by yourself or if you're a huge family. I think creating that edible garden and planting your own vegetables is something, and then actually getting your kids to go and pick them, is something that everybody should do.
Now, it's still, you know, on the subject of edible gardens and so forth, the trends in the past was, you know, it had to be a separate place, hidden away from the garden, the back of the garden. And then in the last couple of years, we saw the trend moving and said, it's an integrated space. It is got to be part of your garden. It could be part of your, you know, the most important part of your garden. You could grow it there. Do you think the trend would still hold this time?
I think it's becoming more and more trendy now, because the vegetables that we're growing are no longer just the greens and the whites. They have all these different, you know, you get a purple cauliflower, you get even the 2 different colored cabbages. So because our vegetables are becoming more colorful as well, people are so much more easily trying to integrate them into their gardening. So you would have the spinach plant next to the roses, And in the Life of the Garden website, I saw a lovely article on planting your cauliflowers into pots. You know, if you have a pot that's about 45 centimeters big, then plant a cabbage in that, and it would look amazing to just see that cabbage coming through. It's, you know, like a flowering plant.
Wow, that's interesting. So you just take one individual, and I think it also has that wow factor because you see it there all on its own, and it becomes sort of a fantastic, you know, talking point if you have just one. So maybe you have three different ones, put three pots together. I'm just trying to, you know, visualize that. You say, if I put a purple one in the middle pot and maybe two white ones, I'm sure it'll just make a stunning display.
Yeah, it would be beautiful. I mean, for quite a while now, we've always had the ornamental kale.
Okay.
As what we would sell as a winter crop. And that comes in the purples and the whites. So now it's just taking that step further and not making it ornamental. It's actually edible. And I think it's gorgeous. I'm definitely going to be trying that this year.
Well, I think you've got me thinking already. You know, I think just plant three different types of cauliflowers, you know, get and maybe the purple or get two, one white and two, you know, and then just arrange it. I think that would just make a stunning display.
Yeah. So I think that's where the edible gardening is mixing in with your flowering plants or your patio plants that you have, you know, if you only have a small space. It doesn't mean to say that you can't grow vegetables or that you can't grow vegetables and something else, because there's a lot of beneficial flowering plants too, especially going into autumn and winter. That, you know, a lot of our pansies, violas, those are all edible. The anthers are edible flowers. So we have a lot of edible flowers that we could use in our cooking or in our baking during the winter time too.
I saw that, and you know, whenever you get into a supermarket these days, and you're spoiled, you know, because you don't just see the greens anymore. You see this wonderful color, so you can buy a few of that, and just sprinkle it over your salads. It makes such a, you know, just a different display, and you know, it just entices people and say, "Wow, there's something different. Let me taste that. Let me have a look at that one." And I think you could even match the colors, you know, to the decor and so forth. So there's lots of things that you could do to.
You want to dump the idea?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we've got 4 D's. Do, date,
our team actually,
delegate, and dump the idea if it's not working for you.
And the one
you guys also advocate very strongly that the guideline in chronic stress, and that is lifestyle changes, which you've been talking about all morning, behavioral changes, which is linked to lifestyle changes, of course, and personal habit changes, which I spoke about long and hard. And that was about smoking, and you, you know, spoke.
Hello,
about
sorry about that, Kerry. I think we seem to have a cross line. I do apologize. I'm sorry about that. We'll get back to you in a couple of minutes. Just 1 second, please. I do apologize. Hello, Mohammed, are we okay now? Hello.
Hello.
Can you hear me? Sorry, I do apologize, Kerry. I think there's something happening. Just 1 second, please. The engineer's just trying to sort that out. 1 second. I do apologize for that slight disruption. Hi, good morning, Kerry. Are you back with me?
Okay, what do you do in your life? You know, what sort of, and I know...
Sorry, man, Kerry, I think we still have a mixed line. Kerry, can I get back to you again?
What have you done with your loved one?
Hello, Kerry. Hello, Kerry.
Did you know that gardening is the fastest growing hobby in the world? Islam highly recommends planting trees and urges people to protect them to the extent that planting a tree is considered as an act of worship for which special prayer is recommended. The Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, "Unless you are compelled, do not cut down a tree." So join Ismail Pariyava every Sunday between 8:30 and 9:30 a.m. on the program Dare to Be Different.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Yes, Dare to Be Different. My name is Ismail Pariyava. We do apologize for the technical glitch. We seem to have had some cross lines, but I think that's been sorted out. And we are truly, truly blessed. And we welcome all our listeners, whether it's via the audio streaming, medium wave 1548 in Satellite Islam. And we've got a wonderful guest, and that's Kerry Goodwin, and we're talking about trends for 2016. And we're talking about edible foods and the trends going forward. If you'd like to join our conversation, the number to dial this morning, 854-1548. The number again this morning, 854-1548. Hi, Kerry, good morning.
Good morning again.
Sorry, man,
I'm
it seems to have... I hope we have a clearer line and we don't have an interference. I do apologize for that.
Please, it was fine.
Okay. Kerry, we were talking about edible flowers and edible foods, and we were talking about the cauliflowers and so forth. Let's go on, and what are the other trends that we can see?
One of my favorite ones that is coming up is to have big, bold flowers. So it's almost like the gerberas. you know, they're in rich pinks, bright yellows. I want to say like sunshine yellows, oranges. It's your hibiscus flowers at the moment are looking gorgeous. So it's these big flowers. And I think it's actually a trend from the fashion world. So when you look at the different shirts and dresses that ladies are wearing these days, you know they have these big flowers on them. And so people are trying to imitate that, and whether we learned it from, you know, the fashion industry took it from nature or we putting it back into nature. It's these bold flowers that are saying, look at me, not only in color, but in the size that I am. And I was quite excited when I was reading that about a trend for this year.
Yes, and we talk about the saucer-shaped flowers, you know, saucer-sized flowers. And I saw some beautiful hibiscus. I went to see someone through the course of the week, and I saw this most beautiful hibiscus with these, you know, gorgeous colors. You had them in reds and whites and pinks, and I thought, wow, that's really making a statement. And now you say that's been translated. I think that'll make a fantastic, to just even have a corner of that, Kerry.
Well, the hibiscus, they could go either in, you know, in your garden and grow into beautiful big plants, or there are quite a lot of varieties that have now been made into potted varieties. So you could put them on your patio and you almost treat them like a patio plant, and they won't get much bigger than 40 to 50 centimeters.
Well, that's fantastic. That's good news.
Yeah, and then the other one that also should be looking beautiful at the moment is the dahlias. And when you said saucer shape, that made me think, because a lot of the dahlias, their names are dinner plate. I mean, that's the size that they're meant to be. And I always think I didn't manage to get to the Kalahari this year. But when we drive down towards the Kalahari and go through some of the farmlands, but the farmhouses there have the most beautiful big dahlias on the, along their fences. And I just think, wow, those are amazing. So those are the types of flowers that we're looking at. Is really big ones. I know when it comes into the autumn and winter, then, you know, we'll have the tiny, the little violas and that sort of thing. But then there's a pansy that's called Pansy Colossus, and it comes in lots of different colors. And that's also the bigger one. So it's about the size of the palm of your hand, the flower.
Now, just going back to the dahlia, you know, dahlias used to be fashionable many, many years ago. Is that coming back into fashion? Is that what we're saying?
I think they are coming back into fashion. I think a lot of the older plants that we, I want to say, have had lost or we didn't remember, or they take a very long time to grow, is they're coming back because people are realizing that gardens take time and take patience, and it doesn't always have to be instant. So the dahlias, because, I mean, what happens with a lot, especially with the bulbs, is people see them now and around, and then they want them. And then we're like, no, but you were supposed to plant them in November, you know, October type of time to get this beautiful big blossom. And so I think with people realizing that and taking up gardening as a hobby, and, you know, it's so good for your health. There's so many good advantages to gardening. People are then going back to realize that actually plants don't always have to be instant. And so the dahlias, which do take a while to come into bloom, are actually making a comeback, yeah.
Okay, so that's the second trend. Tell some other thoughts of yours with regards to the trends.
The other one that's also making is a wonderful one is called petscaping. So people are making their gardens more pet-friendly, or they're planting special things especially for their pets. So they will have a little patch of their grass, which is especially for pet grass, you know, and it's a grass that's more easily digestible for their dogs and their cats. Or they put it in pots if they live on a patio, you know, catnip and that type of thing. So they're just creating a space for their animals to be at home as well, which I thought was quite lovely.
Different idea altogether. Now just think of the catnip plant. I mean, if you have a cat, and, you know, that would definitely draw the cats to that. And I think that's just a different way of if you have these, you know, feline creatures in within your environment to attract them.
Yes. So absolutely. I mean, a few years ago, it used to be, you know, how do I keep my neighbor's cat out of my garden, and what can I use, and that type of thing. And
what type of gun should I be keeping? Should it be a longer one or a short?
Exactly. And now it's actually, well, we're going to have these pets in our garden, and let's create a space that's especially for them.
Okay.
So, you know, they don't go and lie all over my flower bed or something like that. So I thought that was a really lovely one.
Okay.
The other one that's actually becoming really an interesting one, and it's the blending of technology with gardening. So it's like using that different apps on your cell phone and learning from those and then going to go and apply it into your garden. Because I think, you know, most of us would have our cell phones on us all the time. And we don't really take it outside to do gardening because we're worried it will get wet or drop in the sand or something like that. But now there's many apps being developed that would create, or people are taking photos and then sending them in. I mean, I know even for us, customers are, you know, sending us photos to say, what's this, or this insect is eating my plant. So they're using technology to garden. And I think that's a fantastic thing, because you don't want it to be separate. You don't want to think that garden is seen as old-fashioned. I mean, gardening can be very, very trendy. But then the technology has to be able to fit, and they need to blend together. And I think there's a big push for that this year. You'll see a lot more gardening apps becoming available on your phone.
Well, that's fantastic. So, you know, we're trying to blend the two. So it's not just about blending flowers and plants, but now technology and gardening. I think that's fantastic. And then these apps would really be an amazing additional tool. Maybe novice gardens, not only novice gardens, but even too for, you know, people who have been gardening for so long, and all you could do is look fine, I have this problem, and you send, you know, use the app, and you get a reply almost instantly, and I think that's what it's all about. My only fear about all of that, Carrie, is, you know, this instant gratification. Are we not extending it a bit too far? Because, you know, we all want everything just on the turn of the button, you know, everything just it. And I'm a bit concerned about that one.
It is a challenge, actually, but I think that's where gardening does keep you, you know, takes you back to earth.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what gardening can do, and a lot of garden centers do that, is they cater for the instant. So, you know, like in our garden centers, we have color bags.
Mm-hmm.
And there are lots of nurseries that do color bags. So when you come in, you buy the plant, it's already flowering, and it looks fantastic. You take it home, put it in your garden, and it's going to give you instant joy. But then I think there's a lot of people who are trying to see that gardening and things change, and so they're making that more adaptable. And, you know, it used to be that when I want to talk about 10 years ago, we would never be able to sell a tray of seedlings which had a flower on it, because people were prepared to wait for the flower to see what it looked like. And now these days we sell lots of, you know, seedlings with the flowers on. So you have these different generations that will either buy them green and wait to see what the flower looks like, or they're actually flowering already and they're saying, put me in your garden, put me in your garden straight away. This is where I want to be.
Well, I think we are... Sorry, carry on, Kerry. Carry on.
No, so I just think, you know, luckily gardening does cater for everyone, but then at the same time, they have to realize that gardening is cyclic. And so the things will change over time, and your plants, you know, will either die and then you use them again as compost, or they're going to need to be cut back, and they might not look good, so good for a while, but then they're going to come back again. So I think that's where, you know, gardening is actually teaching people that instant gratification isn't only the only way to go, that if you're patient, you can do the most joyous things will come out of being patient.
I think that's one of the greatest lessons that one learns from gardening is patience, you know, because when you go in there, you never know what's going to happen. For example, this year we started out without any real knowledge of the drought, and before you know, woe and below, it hit us, and we had to adapt to that. And then gardening is all about having that amount of patience, because it takes a long time for a garden to mature. It takes a long time for you to get the result that you want. So for me, that gardening is all about the patience.
Absolutely. I mean, my favorite is sometimes when customers come in and then they're buying plants that are going to grow big, but they want it to look amazing now. So then instead of saying taking 9 plants, they'll take 15, because we like to work in odd numbers being gardeners. And then I'll say, but if you just give it 6 months, you'll see you won't need the 15, you'll only need the 9. And they're like, no, don't. I'm going to put it all 15. But then the poor plants are so squashed together that they don't have space to reach their full potential. And so in about 3 months' time, they have to take out some of those extra ones and then hopefully donate them to a charity or give them to a friend, because their plants were growing and they didn't realize that they would grow so wonderfully.
Well, that's so true, because I've seen trolley loads and wonder where they're going to, in what space do they have, because now that we know that people have scaled down in gardens, I wonder when I see all these trolley loads going out, wow, they're going to plant all that, are really going to get all of that into that small garden? And like you said, you know, come back in a couple of months. Now, you've also raised a very interesting question, and everyone's the one that always gets asked, why do you always put things in 1s, 3s, and 5s and odd numbers by that? And I think you said it's something about gardening. Tell us something about that.
I think it's actually just been a design structure that we've been brought up with, and it's, I want to say it's been passed down from generation to generation, because one is always a focal point, and then your threes is so that, because gardening, and I'm talking, you know, I want to say more natural gardening, not formal gardening, because obviously formal gardening, you could plant in twos and fours and straight hedges and that sort of thing. But when you're going for the natural garden or the meadow look, you want it to look a bit wild, and so you don't want straight lines. And so by planting in odd numbers, you're less likely to be able to create that straight line.
Yeah.
So that's why we tend to go more for odd numbers.
You know, when I see the trends also, when you want a wow factor in any place, you'd rather put in ones and threes, and is that perhaps what is coming through, Kerry?
Yeah, I know that's where we do that all the time when we do gardening or planting or that type of thing, is because it creates more of a statement. You either lead the person's eyes, so you have the two plants leading to the one plant, or so it's kind of to create that depth and perception to make it a 3D environment that you're planting into, or you know, where you put in your plants. Whereas one plant, or if you're going in even numbers, can often be seen to be very 2D. And it's not almost the right way to describe it, but that's what I see, is that when you have alternate numbers or odd numbers, you're going to draw people's eyes to a particular point, and you're softening it. Whereas the twos and the fours and the sixes are, oh, look at me, I'm structured, and it makes me think of soldiers. And, you know, there is a place for that. Some gardens have very formal structure, and you need that. But as a general garden, most of the people who are gardening, they're gardening for the love of it, and they want beauty, and so maybe the structure isn't something that they're looking for, and then it's easier to work in odd numbers.
Thank you for that. Any other trends that you've come through? What about the trend about bringing the garden into the home and the home into the garden?
I love that one. And it actually brings through two trends, because the one is the blending of your inside and your outside garden. And the other one is the mixing of your plants. So plants that we used to think would be only for indoors, you can now put them on your patios or move them a little bit more outdoors. And it's because we move into a more potted container type gardening. So, you know, instead of taking your friends cut flowers for if you're going for dinner or something, if you're taking them a potted plant, and the potted plant could be a beautiful potted plant with succulents, which they could put either indoors for a while and then move it outdoors to a nice sunny spot, or it could be a pot with herbs in it, which again they could keep in their kitchen, or a window box with herbs in it, they could keep it in their kitchen for about 6 weeks or so, and then move it out into the garden, or transplant those plants out into the garden. So I think there's this lovely blending and mixing of what you can put indoors and outdoors, and actually transferring plants. I know I do that all the time, is I buy the different plants, and I like them so much that I put them in my house first, because I think I really want to enjoy you when I come home at night and it's too dark to go and walk in the garden. And then, but then after a while, once, you know, I want to say the novelty's worn off, then I go and put them in the garden, and then they almost get a renewed life in the garden. And so I had a customer yesterday who bought the gerbera that we were talking about. And I said, oh, are you going to put it inside? And she said, no, I'm going to go and plant it outside. And I was like, oh, that's fantastic. So there's a plant that, say, for me, I would have kept it inside for a little while. And she's like, no, I'm going to put it outside, and it's going to look lovely there. So we've got this complete mixing of where your plants can go. And you just have to find a happy spot for your plant. You know, make sure it is in the right environment, whether it be indoors or outdoors, to make it happy still and grow successfully. But a lot of plants are quite adaptable.
So that's a trend of trying to bring your garden to the home, or the other way around. And I think there's lots of opportunities and possibilities if you just have the patience and wanting to mix it. And I think there's so much you can do with that particular aspect.
Absolutely. The one that I like as well, and I always get so sad sometimes when the spathiphyllum, how you plant it, I have one inside, and it tells me how to water when to water my other plants inside. But actually now I've got an app on my phone which tells me when to water my plants.
Wow.
When we were younger, we had to use the finger test. So it just shows you how you blend in all the things. And then, like for my outside plants, I sometimes use my New Guinean patience. as, and not all of them, but I have one plant that I almost use it as a test, and it will, when it starts looking a little bit thirsty, then I'm like, oh, okay, everybody needs water now, and then I'll go and water the plants. So, you know, I'm using my plants to teach me something as well. And I think that's one of the trends to do with gardening, is how we can learn from the plants, and in that way assist the plants to grow better and perform more nicely. That's such bad English. I want to say perform more nicely. Perform better. So it's, people are becoming quite scientific about gardening, and they're really looking at the finer details as well. And I think that's even to do with the pesticides and the chemicals. They don't want to just spray anything. And that is a trend, too, is how we move in to make it still fun and loving, but we're looking at the finer detail in the gardening. What is going to be best for this plant to perform amazingly?
So, you know, the good indicators, you know, so we're looking at one plant, it could tell us an indication of whether all the other plants need. And I think that's a fantastic thing to look at some of your plants and say, well, fine, it will give you exactly an idea of what has to be done to other plants. Okay, we're coming almost to the end of the program. You know, I've got a couple of questions. Could I ask you, so just two or three. With regards to, I've got a query with regards to compost, and person wants to know, you know, when you have peppers, it has the seeds in them, and for example, cucumbers, or even now with the summer fruits like watermelons and so forth. If you throw in, you know, those into your compost heap, and some of these seeds, you know, that go in the pits or whatever it is, would they be destructive, or is it fine to throw it into your compost heap?
You can put them in your compost. Actually, find they'll start growing within your compost. So a lot of people, especially tomatoes, peppers, the melons, and your squashes.
Mm-hmm.
You actually find those will tend to grow in your compost on the top surface level, because when you're making your own compost, if you're doing it correctly, the temperature to degrade the different material within your compost heap normally gets so high that in the middle of your compost heap, those seeds wouldn't actually be able to survive. And that's what, you know, on the farms where they produce compost as a business, that's what happens there, is the seeds get killed because the temperature within the compost making process gets so terribly high. In our home compost heaps, you know, sometimes we don't get those high temperatures because we've allowed a lot of air to go in, or we mix it too often, or we, you know, add something that creates a bit too much air, and so then there's not this high temperature that manages to kill those seeds. But I always think it's quite fun to have a, you know, a squash or a butternut coming out of my compost heap. So it just means that when you're trying to use it in your garden, that's when you get that blending of plants. So you might have a beautiful flower bed or rose garden, and then the next thing you know, in the springtime, you see a tomato plant growing. And that often happens when you've used your own compost. And to me, it's not the end of the world. You could either pull it out, or you could leave it there and enjoy the tomatoes when it comes, when it grows.
Final question, could you mix different lavenders, and are they all edible?
Lavenders, the flowers are edible, just in very, very small quantities. So you can mix them together, as I say, but just use very, very little. I would never use, you know, not even the whole flower. If you're going to use, like, baked lavender biscuits or something, you would break it up into pieces maybe not bigger than your fingernail, and a tiny portion of your fingernail within the biscuits, because it is, the oils in there are very, very strong. So it is edible, but just, as I say, use very, very small quantities with it.
Well, thank you very much, Carrie. Thank you for being on this program. It's been fantastic having you on. I've learned so much, and it's been enjoyable. I do apologize for the technical hitch, I'm sure we'll chat during the course of a couple of months again, and there's lots to chat and lots to talk about. But
yes,
you take care.
Thank you very much, too. Have a wonderful Sunday.
Thank you very much, and you take care. Are you going to be at the nursery, Carrie?
Yes, we are. Actually, we're at Colourful Splendor today.
So we're at Colourful Splendor. That's just off the Beyers Nadir. Is that correct?
That's the other one. That's off Jan Smuts in Craigle Park.
So in Jan Smuts off Craigle Park, and the directions they could carry again?
It's just off, if you come from Jan Smuts and you turn into Rothsay Avenue, you go all the way down to Delta Park, and it's at the bottom along the river in Craigle Park on the corner of Marlborough and Richmond.
Well, there you have the address. Thank you very much. You take care. Everything of the best, Carrie.
Thank you very much, too.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye. And that was Carrie Goodwin. I beg your pardon, giving us some wonderful, wonderful ideas of what the trends are going to be for 2016. Come May, when we have the Chelsea, we'll have additional information of the trends going forward. And inshallah, that's all from me. Until we meet again, you take care. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.